Mr. Chairman and friends, tonight we come to what may be described as a turning point. As you've already heard, this is the fourth lecture in our present course. And as we're to have eight meetings, including seven lectures, this means that really, tonight, we arrive halfway through the whole series. But when I say that we come to a turning point, I don't mean just numerically in the sense that today we come to the middle lecture in the whole series. We come this evening to a turning point in another sense also. Let me first of all just recall our progress in this series so far. In the first lecture, we studied just a few aspects, just even a few corners of a very vast subject, and we tried to look into the analytical psychology of the Abhidharma, the higher doctrine or the higher teaching. In the course of the second lecture, we studied the psychology of spiritual development. And last week, in the third lecture, we tried to go a little into the depth psychology of the Yogacara. And in the course of these three lectures, we saw throughout an increasing preoccupation with the spiritual life, even though in a sense, ostensibly, we were concerned with psychology, with aspects of Buddhist psychology. We saw that for Buddhism, for the Buddhist tradition, psychology was not an autonomous subject, was not cut off from the rest of Buddhism, as it were, not studied for its own sake, but that it was a sort of byproduct of the quest for metaphysical self-knowledge, even the quest for enlightenment. At the same time, we couldn't help seeing, we couldn't help noticing that though in the course of these three lectures, from week to week, we were increasingly preoccupied with the spiritual life, we couldn't help noticing that the approach to the subject on the part of the Abhidharma, on the part of the Yogacara, and so on, was very definitely intellectual, very definitely, as it were, conceptual. Both the Abhidharma and the Yogacara aimed at the conscious mind, addressed themselves to the conscious mind. And inasmuch as they addressed themselves to the conscious mind, to the reason, to the intellect, they used the language of ideas, the language of concepts, the language of abstract thought. But as we know, man is very much more than his conscious mind, very much more than the intellect, very much more than abstract thought. If we look below the surface, if we look below the rational, the conceptual surface, we find that underneath there are vast, unplumbed depths. And these depths, vast and unplumbed, make up what we call the unconscious mind, or simply the unconscious. And the total man, man in his entirety, man in his wholeness, in all his aspects, in all his developments, consists of both of these. Not just the conscious mind, not just the rational surface, but both the conscious and the unconscious. Consciousness is, as it were, just like a light froth playing and sparkling on the surface. But the unconscious is like the vast ocean depths, dark and unplumbed, lying far beneath. And it is the unconscious, the non-rational part of man, which is by far the larger part of his total nature. And the importance of this part, this unconscious part, is far greater than we generally care to recognize. So if we want to appeal to man, if we want to appeal to the whole man, man in his totality, in all his aspects, it isn't enough to to appeal just to the conscious mind, the rational mind, the intelligence. That only touches the surface, that floats, as it were, upon the surface. We have to appeal also to something more. We have to speak another, an entirely different language than the language of ideas, the language of concepts, the language of abstract thought. So what is that language that we have to speak in addition to the language of concepts if we want to reach the total man? That extra, that additional language is, we may say, the language of images. In a sense, the language of pictures. Not the language of the abstract, but the language of the concrete form, the image, as I said, the picture. We have to speak, if we want to reach this non-rational part of the human psyche, we have to speak in images, we have to use the language of poetry, use the language of myth, the language of legend, and so on. But this other, no less important language, is one which, we may say, many modern people have forgotten. Or if they haven't actually forgotten it, they know it, not fully, not completely, not perfectly. They don't really speak it. They know it only in a few distorted and broken forms. They, as it were, stammer and stutter in this language. They have no real, full, clear utterance in it. But Buddhism, traditionally, very definitely, does also speak this language of images, this language of poetry, of myth and legend, and so on. And it speaks it no less powerfully than it speaks the language of concepts, of abstract thought. And it is through this language of images, language of poetry, myth and legend, spoken by Buddhism, that we must now begin to listen. And this it is which constitutes our turning point, our real turning point in this course, in this series. The turning point is in fact the change over from the conceptual, the abstract mental approach to the non-conceptual, the approach in the form or in the terms of images and pictures. It's also a change over, a transition from the conscious mind to the unconscious mind. Last week, when we spoke about the Yogacara and its psychology, we were talking about the depths. But today, or from today, from this week, we shall not be merely talking about the depths, but we shall be descending, or beginning to descend actually into them. Today we are going to encounter, as it were in those depths, some of what I have called the archetypal symbols in the biography of the Buddha. And I say encounter advisedly. We're not just going to think about them. We're not just going to conceptualize about them, not just going to understand them intellectually with the conscious mind. What we have to do today is something more than that. We have, as it were, to be receptive. We have, as it were, to take in these images, these archetypal symbols, open ourselves to them, listen to them, and allow them to speak in their own way to us, especially to our unconscious depths, the greater part of ourselves, the unconscious mind. And in this way we have, as I say, as I repeat, not just to think about them, not just to realize them mentally, but to experience them in the depths, to assimilate them if we can, and even eventually to allow them to transform our whole lives.